is not working.
It is. You got to take it a little.
Madres parshas pekunde asitos yas. The non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress are like the winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception. Yes. They must be tolerated without being disturbed. Srila Prabhupada explains what it means to not be disturbed. There was a professor, Indian gentleman, who challenged Prabhupada. Krishna tells in Gita that pleasure, pain, happiness, distress, heat, cold, honor, dishonor, success, failure, these are dualities. They appear and disappear like winter and summer seasons, and one should tolerate them without being disturbed. He spoke this message to Arjuna, who was the exemplary disciple. However, in Mahabharata, when Abhimanyu, the son of Arjuna, was slain, Arjuna lamented. As did Subhadra. Subhadra is Krishna's sister, the mother of Abhimanyu. She also lamented. Arjuna cried with broken heart. So why was he disturbed? If Krishna told him, you should not be disturbed. Prabhupada gave a very practical and precise example. He said it is natural for a mother and father to love their child. It is natural for mother and father to cry in grief when a child dies. Devotees are soft-hearted. They're not hard-hearted. But Arjuna was not disturbed. Because his service to Krishna was not disturbed by those circumstances. He continued his service to Krishna faithfully, loyally, with devotion, even after the death of his child. Prabhupada explains, in the summer heat, it's very difficult to cook. Especially in some places, they cook on fire. It's not just press a button, electricity comes. Gas. Cooking with fire. Fires. So cooking in the summertime in the heat is a great austerity. And to take cold bath in winter is also difficult. Quite disturbing, actually. But yet, out of one's responsibility in the service of the Lord, they will carry on and do these things, even if it is difficult. Srila Prabhupada on Jaladuta had several heart attacks. In New York City, he had a stroke after the heart attacks. What does it mean that he was not disturbed? He carried on. He carried on with his service despite all these difficulties. Sometimes Prabhupada was glorified, and actually at other times he was criticized and blasphemed. Can you imagine? Prabhupada was the ambassador to the pure culture of the Vedas. He came to the world to give Krishna, the name of Krishna, the teachings of the Gita, the Bhagavatam, and the Vedas. and yet to fulfill the wish of the Lord. And yet there were Brahmins that condemned him. That why is he giving initiations to people born of outcast families? Lord Chaitanya made a very strong statement. The Yuga Dharma, the process of spirituality for this age is the chanting of the holy names. And he may be a charya of the chanting, Srila Haridas Thakur, who was an outcast born of an untouchable family. That was Lord Chaitanya's very graphic statement to the world. That one's qualifications are to be considered, not simply one's birth or physical characteristics. Rupa Goswami tells that just like if there's foaming bubbles on the Ganga, we can move aside the foaming bubbles, but we should still bathe in the Ganga. In the same way, even if a saintly person is from a lower family, or if a person has some physical diseases, those things are not to be considered. What's to be considered is what is the quality of a person's life? What is the person's character? What ideals does that person hold sacred? And what do they represent? That is all important. That is the Ganga of Krishna that we want to bathe in. Even if there's some other pollutants that, or foaming bubbles that may be also there. So, Srila Prabhupada was criticized, condemned. He was giving his life to represent the pure culture of India, and there were leaders of India saying, he's doing a very bad thing. He has no right to do this. And then even some of his god brothers, he's just preaching to a few hippies. There's nothing great about that. And when his disciples wanted to call him Prabhupada, he was criticized. So this is very difficult. It hurts the heart when people you love and people you're trying, people criticize you. Sometimes he was praised, sometimes he was criticized. That's the way the world is. You can please some of the people some of the time, but you can never please all the people all the time. Abraham Lincoln or someone like that. That's just the way the world is. Whatever you do. Sometimes you succeed, sometimes you fail. But Prabhupada carried on his service. So he explained to this professor that even though Arjuna suffer the natural heartbreak of a father whose son dies in such an unfortunate way. He was only 16 years old. And they cheated. They committed very unethical, immoral acts to kill him. But still, Arjuna continued the fight. So this is what it means to not be disturbed. That our willingness to serve is not disturbed. Our responsibilities to carry on our service is not disturbed, despite all kinds of difficulties. Physical difficulties, mental difficulties, adhyatmakadi, daivakadi, bhautika. Misery is caused by the environment, like too much heat. Sometimes it's too cold. Yes? When it's too hot, we wish it would get cold, and when it's too cold, we wish it would get hot. That's the nature of this world. Very well. Some people move to Hawaii, where it's not too hot and not too cold. But there's a tremendous amount of drug addiction and alcoholism and all kinds of other crazy things there. So obviously, even though it's not too hot and not too cold, people are not very happy there. Cuba is a very nice country as far as weather. Yes. And still, so many people are taking boats to escape. To New York, where it's freezing cold. So yes, grass is always greener on the other side in this world. It's the nature of our... When we're not content within, we're always looking for something else outside of ourselves to find contentment. And really, that's what modern technology is about. Somehow or other, people are just not satisfied within themselves. So they're always looking for something different, something better, to just try to fill that emptiness. And more and more and more and more and more. Yes. It used to be that, actually, when I was in Bombay a few years ago, we went to visit the house of Kartikeya Mahadevi. He was Prabhupada's very good friend. Have any of you heard of him? Yes, I'm sure everyone knows everything about the history of Hare Krishna. Kartika, he was one of the greatest advocates of wheatgrass. We would preach to Prabhupada that he should take wheatgrass. He would make wheatgrass for Prabhupada. I don't know how many times he took it. But he was very loving and friendly to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very affectionate. He stayed in his house, stayed in a house that he provided for over a month, and many letters are from that home that he had sent him. So, his son, Kirtan Mahadevi, he told us he still had the typewriter that Prabhupada used to use. There you go. Mm-hmm. Now, I happened to go to that place with Shyam Sundar Prabhu, who was Prabhupada's personal secretary for several years. Would you like to hear the rest of the story?
Yes, I will.
It's a good story, actually. Shyam Sundar really wanted to see that typewriter, because he was typing all Prabhupada's letters in those days. Prabhupada would dictate the answers and he would type. And he carried around this typewriter for about 3 years all over the world. He wanted to see it. He asked Kirtan Mahadevi, "How did you get this typewriter?" He said, "Prabhupada stayed as a guest in our house for so many days that he gave us the typewriter." Yes? So, when Shyam Sundar saw that typewriter, it was as if he was seeing God. It was as if he was seeing Prabhupada. And that typewriter was an old 1950s Royal typewriter. Huh? It was electrical, but it was still, you had to press the keys really hard, like, chew, you know, and this piece of steel went, chew. Hussein, and then he goes, chew, and the piece of steel goes, chew, and just smashes against the paper and makes a letter. Have you seen those type of typewriters?
Yeah.
Do they still exist?
Antique stores.
Antique stores. It was an antique. It's from the 1950s. Royal typewriter. And Sam Singer just started typing on it. And he just knew how it worked perfectly. You can see, he just like, so he typed thousands of letters on it. So Srinathji Prabhu, who's a wealthy businessman, he was with us. He said to Kirtan Mahadevya, "I will buy you a brand new computer. Any brand you like, in exchange for this old 1950s typewriter." Do you think he did it? He said, "If you buy me a brand new 747 jumbo jet, I'll trade this typewriter."
Prabhupada used this type.
There you go. When I saw that typewriter, nobody even
looks in the direction of such a typewriter anymore. Now there's computers. Big computers are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Now people, even their telephones, they make them into computers. I don't know how it all works, but somehow or other. So much progress, so much technology, medical technology, communications technology, automobile technology, transportation technology, educational technology. But are people happier? Are people finding more inner fulfillment in life? Suicide rate is growing. Alcoholism is growing. Drug addiction is growing. Divorce rate is growing. Pollution is growing. Real happiness is not in these things. Real happiness is in having an ideal that makes our life fulfilling. Having a purpose that we're willing to live for and die for. That brings real satisfaction to the heart. And when that ideal is Krishna, when that ideal is God, then Krishna from within reciprocates. To love is the only real noble purpose of human life. To love God and to understand God's love on us. And to be instruments of that love in whatever we do. That is the ideal of the body.
So Srila Prabhupada explained that Arjuna,
Arjuna was, whether it was hot or cold, whether there was happiness or distress, whether there was honor or dishonor, he continued his service to the Lord. That is the transcendental state of consciousness. And Krishna reciprocates when we have that consciousness. And really, that is something everyone and anyone can do if we just have the will to do it. If we have the will to do it, we will choose the association that will make us strong, and we will choose those activities that will make us strong. In the winter it's cold and icy. I think last winter was quite cold, was it not? Yes? And this summer may be quite hot. We have our heaters and we have our air conditioners to make life livable. But when you come to Bhaktivedanta Ashram on 4th Street. We have Dayalnitai Vijayagoranga. They are either heating system and air conditioning system and everything else. We are finding shelter in them ultimately. Eager to hear, eager to chant, eager to serve. Tonight we have His Holiness Sacha Nandana Swami, who is the beloved of every sincere soul's heart, according to my observations. Would anyone like to ask any questions? Yes, Sacha Nandana Maharaj will answer your question.
Yes. This question we get to ask sometimes. There are too many people to place it. Many times they come across a situation where they are met with a situation where we have to please too many people. And all of them are equally important. And many times when we try to please one, the other gets displeased. So Maharaj, how should we actually set our priorities? What is our baseline?
Windows are all closed?
Oh, is the ceiling closed? Oh, yeah.
Can you put the AC on? If it's AC windows, we should open all the windows.
Turn up the AC.
Turning AC here is like the sparrow trying to dry up the ocean.
Lord Krishna, you will in some ways please all others. We come into a situation in this world where yes, maybe our parents have one idea how we should develop and we love them dearly, but it conflicts with our spiritual development, for instance. At such a time we can see that we go into our spiritual development very sincerely and say to Lord Krishna, sorry, I will have to take shelter at your lotus feet now because it's really tough, the reactions which will come. They will be not so satisfied in the moment. But you will see, if you properly take shelter in Lord Krishna, then all of a sudden they become very satisfied. I remember this in my own life. I came to a situation where it was almost intolerable. There was a girlfriend coming to the London temple. I was at the back till there, and I was actually promised to this girlfriend to later marry her. It was an aristocratic lady, and she demanded that I come out of the temple and lead a normal life. It's not possible to disappoint you. My grandfather was dying at the moment when I was in the temple, and he was demanding that I come to his deathbed. I knew what he wanted of me. He wanted to ask me to live a normal life, and I couldn't say no to someone who was dying. So I said, I can't come to your deathbed. My leg is not working very well. My parents desired something from so many. But finally, I just took shelter at Lord Krishna's lotus feet because the devotees told me, maybe at the first instant people will be certain, people will be dissatisfied. And but if you become a sincere devotee, Krishna will take care of this. They said just if you water the root of a tree, then all the leaves are automatically watered. So I really feel that sometimes, yes, some people may cry and shout at us for our insistence that we want to serve Krishna no matter what. But if we make the right decision, And sometimes the right decision is not so easy to find. We might have a need for consultation with more advanced devotees for this, in a certain way, the right way to please Krishna. No? Then, in a magical way, he will the situation will take care of itself. Yes, so try to find out what pleases Krishna. And for that, we have to ask sometimes, ask the spiritual master, ask sadhu, consult the scriptures, and so on. If we do that, then it will work. I remember still the time. I was working at the German Bhagavad Gita, translating the German Bhagavad Gita, and I was doing it in a cold garage without heating in Hamburg. I was covered, because I'm not such a strong person, with a mountain of blankets. You know, German winters are really not for beginners. I was working with a candlelight and translating it. And all of a sudden the door opened and my father entered the garage. He first needed to accustom his eyes to the dimly lit garage. Here my wealthy father, the director of the German railway, at the confrontation of his life. He had confronted ice-cold winters before Stalingrad and Leningrad and survived. He had confronted Polish armies and survived. But here he saw his son in the sub-poverty level, the sub-poverty, and covered by a mountain of blankets. And he looked at me, he first wanted to shout, but only a cry of desperation came from his voice. And then his eyes blinked, and the same person who had confronted so many things, the walls and so on, had to turn around and run out of the garage and cry helplessly like a child in a forest, seeing the sun in such a situation. And this was the first time after 10 years when we had seen each other. he pleaded after he could become normal, you get a house, you marry, if you have an altar in the house and everything, dance and chant in the house, close the doors and the curtains, and please be sane. I decided, I didn't want to hurt my parents, but I decided, let me follow Krishna's advice to surrender my life and do devotional service. Now my father reads the Bhagavad Gita, and he sends letters to the bishop of Hamburg. He just showed me this letter. Oh, I have a son. He is in Krishna consciousness. He is so extremely spiritual and religious, more religious than I have seen bishops in the Catholic Church. Please talk with him, invite him for a lecture. He is very learned, and so on. I'm extremely proud of him, and something has changed. And it was really Krishna who changed his heart. So this formula works. Now I think you would say, but what if different devotees have different expectations? Have I read your mind? Yes, it's easy to read. The thing is, you have at that time, you have to see where is the line of the order which is given to you. There is a line of the order which we have been given, and we have to say, we need to follow this line. And I think Therefore it's important, that's one of the reasons why we do need orientation in this life, this spiritual guidance and so on. And then the devotees say, I have already a previous commitment, I cannot do two things, but maybe another set of hands grow, I can do. But at the moment, I will go to the Ayurvedic hospital of Krishna Chaitanya, and he will maybe be able to sew two extra hands on my shoulders. In other words, when we have an order, this is also true in sometimes devotees have different philosophical understanding. We say, I have already this understanding has been given to me. I cannot follow another understanding at this moment. Please kindly forgive me. Line of order. We have seen this transformation. Very extraordinary in the Father. But you must then really take shelter of Krishna in this state place. For when devotees are there, you know, this one wants this, this one wants this, this one wants this. You really have to go to the line of order. I'm very much like the lecture of Father when he talked about undisturbedness, what it means to be undisturbed, and that is to really follow your duty. That's the only safe place in this world, Rasana, to do what is given to you as a sacred order. And we should be so happy we have such a sacred order, because if we link into this, we can come to the undisturbed level.
Another question? Yes, Gadadhar Panditji.
Right, sometimes as we progress in our devotional service, it seems like things are going fine. We may even feel like we're making advancements. Then all of a sudden certain doubts may come up that never occurred to us before, or perhaps a doubt we had a long time ago that kind of went away but comes back. How do we understand then these kind of doubts in the philosophy may hamper or disturb our devotional service? So how do we, what's the cause of these doubts and how do we deal with them?
Anyone have any doubts?
Everyone has doubts.
When we have complete faith, we are no longer in material consciousness. Yes, the Devi Paramatma, the Devi. When we have complete faith in Guru and Krishna, then all knowledge is revealed to within. And without, our spiritual progress is on the basis of the development of faith. So for a neophyte devotee, or even an advanced devotee who is not on the level of nishtha, very, very firm faith, then doubts will come to haunt us like ghosts. Rupa Goswami explains the progressive elevation on the path of bhakti. At the beginning there's some faith within the heart in God, in something beyond. Krishna, who is within our heart, reciprocates with our desires. He reciprocates with that little bit of faith and mysteriously directs us to associate with devotees who can actually help us develop sadhu sangha. In the association of devotees, we learn the philosophy. we understand the necessity of accepting spiritual teaching from a guru. The guru gives us connection and gives us instructions. And then we follow his instructions. That is called bhajana kriya. To perform worship. To purify ourselves through worship. In our case, we follow these four regulative principles. We regularly chant the holy names. We read the holy scriptures. And we perform services that connect our energies to the loving, emotional service of the Lord. Idle mind is a devil's workshop, it is. So when our bodies and minds are busy for Krishna, then Maya is tolerable. Because she goes into the background. But if we're not really busy for Krishna, then she just appears right in the forefront. And then she's very difficult to overcome. So to keep our minds, to keep our words, to keep our bodies, actions, busy in Krishna's service through bhajan, that is the process of purification. What takes place is anarthani pratisha. That the unwanted contaminations of the heart are gradually cleansed. Lust, envy, anger, greed, pride, and illusion. These six fundamental contaminations that are the source of all suffering are cleansed from us. And when they become very sufficiently cleansed, then we come to the platform of Nishtha. Very firm, unshakable faith. And when we continue to perform our regulative principles of freedom, devotional service, on that level of nishtha, or great faith, then we come to the platform of moksha. We develop such a spontaneous, natural taste for serving Krishna, for chanting Krishna's name. We're just excited to do it. Always. Not just sometimes, but we're always excited to do it. Because we really are experiencing the reciprocation of Krishna's love in whatever we do. And we continue like that, atta shakti, we become attached, totally attached to Krishna and those things in relationship to Krishna. And from atta shakti, this attachment gradually develops bhava, the preliminary state of love, which enters into prema. Pure unavoidable. So faith is something very, very precious. Now, we should be honest that we're not necessarily very advanced, great devotees. So therefore, we are vulnerable to doubts. Where doubts come from? The propensity to doubt comes from our own consciousness, which has been conditioned since time immemorial to try to solve the problems of life and find happiness through alternatives other than Krishna consciousness or God consciousness. So we have that tendency, that inbred deep tendency for doubt. That doubt is Maya, the illusory energy. She keeps us in this material world by keeping that doubt that why do you want to surrender to God? So much you have to lose. In fact, there's not even a God.
You can't. You've never seen him. How do you know? Why should you give so much for something that you don't even know? People say there's an afterlife. What is this nonsense afterlife? This is all sentimental people who are just too insecure to face the reality that everything is finished at the time of death. But nobody's ever come back from the dead. Nobody's ever seen it.
Have you heard these arguments before? They're international arguments.
So this is the propaganda that Maya presents both from within and from without. Because once we surrender to Krishna sincerely, then we're no longer under the control of Maya. So the whole world is permeated with the influence to doubt. And within our hearts, we're conditioned to doubts. But Krishna declares, for the doubting soul, there's neither happiness in this world or the next. And Arjuna, at the beginning of Gita, he was in doubt. He really didn't know what was to be done and what was not to be done. So he, with folded palms, very helplessly, sincerely, he approached Krishna and addressed him as Madhusudan. There was a great demon. It was Kaitava and Madhu. They appeared at the early dawn of the creation, attacked Brahma, and stole Vedas. Stole knowledge from Brahma, who represents the first child of Krishna, the first devotee of Krishna. And the Vedas are the knowledge by which one can make progress toward Krishna. Yes? And these demons stole the Vedas from Brahma. Stole away his knowledge, stole away his intelligence. Because the Vedas were not written. The Vedas was in his mind, in his heart. They stole it from him. But then the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared and killed Madhu and Kaitava and returned Vedas. So Arjuna, remembering this, is saying, Krishna, Madhusudan, you are the killer of Madhu, the demon who bewilders one, who takes away knowledge, who creates doubt. Please kill this demon of doubt within my mind. So doubt is like a demon. Doubt is like a ghost that will definitely come again and again to haunt you. Don't be surprised. Don't be discouraged. We're not pure. We're not so advanced. We haven't come to that nishtha stage. But no one, except some very fortunate nitya siddhas, everyone who comes to that platform of a paramhamsa, they begin with adoshaka. They begin with so many doubts, which are great obstacles. We have to overcome them. And how do we overcome doubt? By cultivating faith. The Prabhupada explains that by hearing about Krishna in the association of very sincere, dedicated devotees, we cultivate our faith. If we hear it from people who are always trying to perpetuate our doubt, we're vulnerable. That will affect us. But when living in this world, especially as grihasthas or people living in a congregation, you have to deal with family members, and you have to deal with business associates, and you have to have certain types of social contacts to some extent. So we have to counteract and balance that by very, very strong association with devotees where we're hearing about Krishna, where we're hearing about the examples of great souls, where we're hearing the philosophy and the logic that makes our spiritual ideals make sense. So this is how we conquer doubt, by associating with devotees and hearing about Krishna. And also praying to Krishna, like Arjuna,
When we chant the holy names, we can pray to Krishna, please come and remove, you have descended in your holy name, remove these doubts, remove these anarthas from my heart, please. Because when you have doubt, all the other anarthas, all the unwanted, immoral, sinful, irreligious things, they have power. They have a foundation to stand on. When you remove that doubt, when you have faith, then they have no real foundation to stand on anymore. They're just kind of floating around. And can be removed by just continuing on the process. Until we come to that level of nishtha, we just carry on with this anartha nivritti, with this bhajana kriya. We carry on practicing the principles of bhakti. And we have to create a culture, we have to create an association, and we have to have our own personal disciplines which will accommodate, facilitate the continuation of our striving today. And gradually, doubts are removed. Real faith emerges. Srila Prabhupada was here in America. What faith he had! Unbelievable faith. He had faith, so much faith. His guru told him, do this. Go to the West and spread Krishna consciousness in English. At 70 years old, he came here with nothing, no one. But he had faith in the words of his guru. Ramananda Prabhu showed me a nice article. When Prabhupada was in Calcutta, days before he even boarded the Jaladut, there was an interview with him in a Calcutta newspaper, and he's telling the, and it's saying Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, or Bhaktivedanta Swami, not Prabhupada then, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, a sannyasi in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, is now going on Jaladuta, going to the West. He has many followers and temples there. That's what the article said, and that's before he got on Jaladuta. Pretty well. That was his faith. He had such faith in the words of his guru. And because he had such faith, by associating with him, devotees who never heard of Krishna, never heard the word Krishna before, after just meeting him, they had complete faith. Not complete faith, but they had strong enough faith to give up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating, to move in the temple, to dedicate their entire youth energy to serving Krishna. They had faith. Where did they get that faith from? So instantly. Of course, it was growing gradually, but where did they get that initial faith from? Just by associating with somebody who had faith. That is a fundamental need of every devotee. To have that association, to substantiate their faith so that they can continue and tolerate the demons of doubt when they come and carry on with our service. Is there any other questions? Does that answer your question at all?
Thank you. Can I be asking them to do about two things? This is the
yes?
You're saying associating with those who have that faith. How do we associate with those? We get around them, what should our consciousness be? How do we benefit from that association with those who are more advanced than us?
We should hear from them, and we should serve. We should hear from them, and we should be eager to serve. That is the process. Yes.
What does that service mean?
Yes.
serve than I serve.
So that means to implement what we have heard in our life. Hearing, we gain theoretical understanding. Very sweet sounds. It's a New York peacock. Through service, we gain realization. Is the very basis of bhakti. It's our constitutional position in the eternal service of the Lord. So service means really to carry out the instructions. When the Prabhupada received instruction from his guru, he took that instruction as his life and soul, and he carried it out without even considering whether it was possible or impossible. Service means to act in such a way to please God by pleasing Guru, pleasing Vaishnavas, and pleasing God's children. Serving Vaishnavas means pleasing Vaishnavas. Serving Guru means pleasing Guru. This is the process of pleasing Krishna. Yes, next question will be answered by this audience by the last talk.
Of the this beautiful story where the demigods and the demons come together to churn the nectar from the milk ocean. Mm-hmm. And the significance you asked, isn't it? Yeah, it is, but because you love it so much, the story. Yes, it's a very good question. Let me just go. I remember that the demons and the demigods were forced to make a truce. Truce means like a contract under which they worked to get a common goal, that is the nectar of immortality. And after they had reached that end, the question came, where would the nectar of the immortality be distributed to? And of course the demons thought, we are most qualified, we should get it. So at that time, Krishna appeared in beautiful form, in the form of Mohini Murti, the most beautiful woman in the universe. And Krishna chooses to become mind alluring. He can do this. So if he chooses to become a woman and be mind alluring as a woman, or he can be the most mind alluring woman that is there. She said, well, let me just debut the nectar. The demons were just getting it. They wanted to obtain this nectar of immortality for themselves. So the demons, when they saw, wow, there's this wonderful woman distributing the nectar. Yes, we should surrender to a wonderful woman. This is very nice. They agreed. And then, of course, Mohini cheated them. She did not give the nectar to the demons. She gave it all to her chosen men, the Suras. Those were on the same path. So, now you ask for significance. And I must tell you very frankly, I'm very fertile in speculating at what this means. I do not dare to say much. Do you know if there is a significance? And you can please imagine it. I must say, I have personally thought about the Leela, because now I'm asked to speculate. I have followed this Leela on. Everyone was there to see Mohini Murti. All the Devatas were there, except for one, the greatest mystic, Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva only heard about Mohini Murti later, and somehow he desired so much to see this extraordinary form, where God had taken the form of the most mind-alluring woman, and he desired so much to see this particular form. Vishnu was not sure and asked Shiva, are you sure you want to see that form? What is about your self-composure? No problem, said Shiva. I am a mystic, I am a yogi. I can certainly retain my patience even in the presence of this beautiful being. So then Lord Vishnu, from being requested so intensely by Lord Shiva, decided, or Lord Krishna actually, Lord Krishna again took that form of Mohini Murti. He came dressed in yellow, like it is Krishna's favorite form, and in yellow zari, and Mohini Murti playfully with the ball, throwing it here and there and catching it. Then Lord Shiva saw this form. He woke up from his mystic trance of samadhi and became so utterly attracted that he could not keep his composure and ran after Mohini Murti, who playfully started to run away to embrace Mohini Murti. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the significance of this Leela, which is a continuation of that other Leela. And he there explains that Lord Shiva tells us this lesson, that we may think we are self-controlled and very exalted, but we cannot stand the alluring potency of the Lord. We should therefore not think like this. This Leela has a very important meaning for me personally, because it binds me to a dear friend who is sitting here with us today. This dear friend one day came all of a sudden to Heidelberg, unexpected and unannounced. He appeared like a traveling sadhu whose ways are not always not ordinary men. And he sat down and told to me, when he sat down, Sashidana Swami, I wish to tell you a story. I am a story lover. And I said, yes, please tell me a story. I hope I don't know it already. And so the friends started to talk, very lovingly, deep concern in his eyes. He said, there was once a tent. No, there was once an Arab. He was in a tent. He finished the educative study. He was living in the cold Sahara Desert, he had one camel. It became bitter, and it became even more colder. So I became interested to lead forward to hear the story. And my friend told me, this is a story about Maya, how easily it can influence every one of us. Okay, that's a little strong, but then it continued. So it became so cold that the camel said to the Arab who was inside the tent, I'm so freezing cold, please give me a little space in your tent. No, said the Arab, you stink. You stay outside. At this moment, the camel said, no, I'm just taking the space in the tent, which is at the roof of the tent. It is not used by you. And I will not speak because I smell a little from the mouth. I will be very tired. So the Arab said, okay, just your head and the neck at the roof of the tent. That's all. Don't ask me for more. So the camels, they slept for some while, and then all of the camels said, said the Arab, you have promised to not speak. I will just very briefly speak. Please allow me to put my feet inside the tent, because every learned man knows if the feet are warm, the rest of the body is warm. But when the feet are cold, the rest of the body is cold. Every learned man knows this. I will just keep my feet at the place where you have your shoes, and then I will be silent. So again, the Arab said yes. And my friend told me the story on and on. You know how the story ended. The camel was in the tent. The Arab was lying outside. So this is a story about how Maya can work on us. Just like Lord Shiva thought he was so strong and could not be overcome by Maya. We sometimes think we are so strong and cannot be overcome by Maya. And once we give Maya a little hand, we say, or a little finger, we say in German, she will take the whole hand. So I found out, this friend sits amongst us, his name is Radhanath Maharaj, and he takes pleasure in unusually throwing flowers over. This is all I know about the significance of the story. Comes in the later part of the story. Don't think you're so strong. Be very careful about Maya, that she doesn't influence you. Even you may be a strong yogi.
Another question?
Yes.
I'd like to know why it is important to pray to Krishna when Krishna already knows the desires and the gratitude that you have in your heart, and also what means of prayer to Krishna service.
Can you speak the second half louder, please?
Yes.
So you have been in church house for 33 years.
I would like to know what makes prayer devotional service And also, why it is important to pray to Krishna when Krishna really knows the desires and gratitude and sincerity that you have.
If you love someone and you never speak anything to that person, you never give anything to that person, you never do anything for that person, then will that person take your love seriously? But it's your answer, Jennifer. So if you want to show our love for God, we must express it. If we want to show our need for God's help, then we must also express it. And in expressing it properly, it actually develops and grows. If we have a little faith in God, we have a little desire to reach out for God's help, and we sincerely pray, that is an expression. That is actually the expression that you really want it. If you do not pray, then you don't really want it. And Krishna reciprocates with our prayer, because it is the expression of our real desire. The praying is one of the 9 processes of devotional service, and is a very essential form of devotional service. Lord Chaitanya was asked, of the 9 processes of devotional service, which is most important? And Lord Chaitanya emphatically said, the chanting of the holy name is the most important. But then the acharyas have explained to us how to chant the holy names. Actually, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is simply calling out the names of God. But the proper mentality, the proper consciousness in which we call out the names of God, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the perfect essence of what Srimad Bhagavatam gives us. My dear Radharani, my dear Lord Krishna, please engage me in your loving service. It is a prayer. When we're chanting the Maha Mantra, it is in a prayerful state. Prayer is most important. Our great acharyas, Narottam Das Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, Shukadev Goswami, Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, they are all teaching us the proper way to pray. When Srila Prabhupada was on Jaladutta, he composed prayers. When Arjuna saw the universal form, he composed prayers. When Gajendra was on the verge of death, he offered prayers. In the Christian religion, the night before the crucifixion, when Jesus Christ was at Gethsemane, he spent the whole night just in prayer. Yes? Prayer is essential. It is a very, very necessary aspect of our devotional development to learn how to pray. But how to pray? That we learn from the great acharyas. Prahlad Maharaj and all the great souls, they do not pray for material benedictions. Because people can get those things even if they don't pray. Yes? But there's something that you can only get through sincere prayer to the Supreme Lord. And that's devotion. That's love. That's a real attitude of service. So yes, God knows what's in your heart. But as you will not take your lover seriously unless he expresses the feelings of his heart, God will not take your desires seriously unless you love him. We want to love him. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us we should be like beggars for that love. We should pray for that love. We should be willing to give anything for that love. That's the greatest service you can do for someone. To help them and to pray for them. Because the Lord is within our hearts. Krishna hears our prayers. And we'll reciprocate if our prayers are sincere. So praying is necessary. Whatever little desire is within our heart, if we express it through proper prayer, Krishna reciprocates and nourishes that desire more and more and more. And what was the second part of your question again? Did I already answer? Prayer is devotional service when we pray for devotional service. Would you like to add something?
Well, I've got one strike. Let's see if I can get another. Actually, Maharaj, I think you really expressed the essential point of her question. I can only repeat it. That love has to be expressed to be nourished. And the whole process of bhakti, as Maharaj is saying, is to take the desire in our heart and to increase it. The desire of bhakti means that Krishna should be pleased. It's a want or a desire. And the process of devotional service is to increase that want or desire. And when love is expressed, it nourishes the love itself. Just like when you pay obeisances, it's an expression of your mood of service. But it's not just a physical expression of your mood of service. It's the mood of service itself expressed in another way. And therefore, in our scriptures, as Maharaj was explaining, there's so many prayers. And one of the specialties, and the Sanskrit word for prayer is vigyapti, which just, you know, in prayer it means entreaty or you're begging. Well, that's one type of prayer. So our great teachers, they have composed prayers which express their mood of love. And when you chant those prayers, it naturally nourishes your own mood of love. Just like you have an expression of love for Guru and to advance in devotional service, you have to... You want to increase that feeling. So if you chant a prayer where a great teacher has expressed that love, it's just the nature of prayer or poetry that it will nourish it. Just like in the morning we sing Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakta Sadma. We chant Guru Dev Kripa Bindu Diya Poro Vedasi Jena Peka Ati Nina. You know, if someone in Narottam is praying, Bhaktivinoda is praying, give me your mercy, just a drop of your mercy. Just like on the disappearance day of our great acharyas or teachers, we're feeling separation, which is an expression of attachment, so we want to nourish it. So they're very wonderful prayers. Ye anilo prema nana karuna prachur. Such beautiful prayers expressing their separation. Just like when you go to a drama, if there's a tragedy, you feel sad. So in the same mood that's expressed will nourish the mood in your heart. So it's an expression of the inner desire. And as Maharaj said, when it's done with a an expression of want or need or desire sincerely, then it also attracts the attention of Krishna. I remember when I was in my have a little place upstate, and Satchinanda Maharaj came to my library and asked me if there's any nectar, any good books. So I was so desirous of showing him. I showed him one book that he never had before, and he didn't exactly ask for it from me. But it was so obvious by his excitement and subtly he was asking. But it was quite a rare book, and it was a rare book, and you really can't get it so easily. And but you know, when he left my room, I kind of thought, is he actually asking me for the book, or he's just appreciating? But when he left, when he left that room, I just saw that his desire for it was so strong that if I had any relationship with him at all, that I would have to give him the book. So the whole process of bhakti and prayer or entreaty is to express our need or our dependence on Krishna and our want and our desire for devotional service. So it gives us an opportunity to take whatever desire we have in our heart and increase that desire by this prayer. And so I think that's one of the purposes of prayer, to express our need or dependence to Krishna. One god brother of mine, he shared one realization which I always kind of repeated so nice. He said that bhakti is a process of mercy. It was Partha Sarathi Prabhu in Govardhan. He just came out of his room. He said bhakti is a process of mercy. And he said the conduit of mercy is our attachment for the great souls. And that attachment comes by our worship and glorification of them. So I think prayer is a way of glorifying and expressing our need. It's a way of getting mercy, which is the process of bhakti, by opening up your heart, expressing your desire, and increasing it. So I think this essential point that Maharaj is making can't be stressed enough, that what's in your heart has to be expressed to show your love, to express your devotion, and to increase it so that you can get that reciprocation from Krishna that you want.
Next question, please. For such a moment, you can select from the other two.
I think Yashoda Rulale had not yet asked the question.
Yes. I heard in one of my remarks that was a while ago, that when we visit the holy Khan, we should not visit just like a pilgrim, act like a tourist, and just go and see the different mandirs or different holy spots. But we should actually seek out the holy men who live there and serve them. My question is actually twofold in response to this statement. Number one, how does one serve the holy men who live at such dams? And number two, how should one approach the different dams that one visits? Not just, you know, the dam in Mayapur, but like holy dams like 26 Second Avenue, or any of the temples that Srila Prabhupada established.
Your first question, how to approach the holy men or saints who live at the holy dam,
and how to serve them.
It's something very nice. I I remember how Srila Prabhupada said in regards to approaching Radhakund that one should follow the instructions of Srila Rupa Goswami as they are given in the Upadeshamrita. That is actually a service to the saints of old. Similarly, we approach a holy dham through a great devotee of Lord Krishna. We should follow the instructions of these great devotees, and we will see how the holy dham will open up to us. The holy dham will open his covering if we follow the instructions of the great souls. Therefore, we must approach the holy dham through the great souls, because they can actually show us what the holy dham really is. And I think it's good to see when we go to a holy dham that we are a member of a certain school. Our spiritual master is a disciple of his spiritual master, who is a disciple, and so on and so forth. So the holy dham can, especially Vrindavan dham, can be approached through the instructions of Rupa Goswami in his wonderful works. I'm not suggesting here jumping over our spiritual master, but I'm suggesting to see him and his teachings in the line of the great Goswamis, especially the Vrindavan Dham can only be opened by the Goswamis for us. So, yes, we serve by following the instructions. So really follow our spiritual master. It is good to understand him in the light of these great Goswamis. I have made personal experience in my stay in the holy dham that I studied for many years each year the nectar of devotion of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and found out that that really this service Prabhupada had asked us to read the law book of just the nectar of devotion performed in the holy dham really opened a new dimension. But there are other services which we can do to sadhus. We can, for instance, give some small donations if we find good sadhus. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the Srihasta disciples, they should do this type of charity. We can serve the devotees, the great devotees, by increasing our Krishna consciousness. Once Prabhupada was asked by a Sankirtan devotee, how could we serve you best? And Prabhupada, the Sankirtan devotee answered, we can serve, and you can serve me best by distributing my books. He really wanted that answer. But Prabhupada said, by developing love of Krishna. I really think the devotees there will be very satisfied, the great devotees who live in the holy dham, if we develop our Krishna consciousness and behave in Krishna consciousness in the holy dham. You had a second question, how to approach the holy places outside of India, like this 22nd Avenue. Well, there is a very interesting instruction for pilgrims written by Parashara Muni, the associate of Srila Vyasadeva. Parashara Muni? Shows here this what is
he? Father.
Father. The father of Srila Vyasadeva. He wrote that when you come to a holy dham, you should follow four points. And I only remember two at this moment. You should be very tolerant with the residents there. that was one thing. But now comes the essential thing, which is the essential of the war. You should expect Krishna's mercy and see what happens as Krishna's mercy. It's a very, very interesting way to come to 22nd Avenue, to expect Lord Krishna's mercy and see what happens as Krishna's mercy. For instance, you might be in the 22nd Avenue and you are in a kirtan which begins to really move you, then you should understand Krishna's mercy. Or someone might chastise you. You should this happened to me in my last visit to 26.
I'm sorry.
You should understand. No, you may not really, and honestly, I don't think of you, and when I think of, I will not reveal. When you chastise, or at this time I'm thrown over with flowers, I will see it as Krishna's mercy to make me more humble. So this is very important, that whatever you see, you should try to see it as the mercy of Lord Krishna. And be open for that mercy.
Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you should beat your man. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you should beat your mind in the morning with broomstick and beat your mind in the night with chappals, shoes. So, we don't see the mind. So, how do we beat that? Because morning usually mind is very calm, so it doesn't really as it is. Maybe in the night we can do.
Because of your spiritual advancement. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, morning shoes, night broomstick.
Yeah.
Should beat our minds with shoes and broomsticks. We should do that. This is order. But that is the spirit. The way I have personally interpreted this is broomstick cleans. Yes? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we should beat our mind with the holy name by sweeping it with the broom of the holy name. And shoes represent service. The feet, to approach the feet of the Lord or the feet of the Guru or the feet of the devotees is to approach them with service. So we beat our mind with shoes by engaging in service of Guru Vaishnavas and Krishna. We beat our mind with broom by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
This way we keep our mind always engaged with Krishna. It becomes our friend. Krishna tells the mind that is uncontrolled is the worst enemy, and the mind that is controlled is the best friend. So if we keep our mind always in the name of Krishna, in the service of Krishna and his devotees, then our mind is the best friend. But beating means we have to do it. It's not that the mind is naturally inclined towards service and chanting. We have to, with our intelligence, we have to enforce the chanting of the holy names in service to Vaishnavas and our mind. Does that answer the question?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
something about that, but I just wanted to tell one story that illustrated your point, Yasoda Dulops, about the Dhamma, how to approach it. Srila Radhanath Swami had great attachment to the holy Dhamma. He had lived there, he joined Krishna consciousness there, and then he had to leave and he went to New Vrindavan. And I think they knew his attraction for the Dhamma, so they never would allow him to go on pilgrimage there, which was a great austerity. I think after 10 or 15 years, finally, they had enough trust in him that he would come back, that they let him go to the Dhamma. And I happened to be there when he came. And I remember I was on the second floor, first floor of the group, the building. And the first thing Maharaj came, I was so amazed. He came up to me with his hands folded and he said, "Any service for me?" So I think that exemplifies the approach to the Dhamma, to actually be in a mood of service, and that reveals the Dhamma. Just one other aspect of that, and what Maharaj was saying, that you know, you have to push the mind. You know how you have to push the mind. And one way of pushing the mind, of reading the mind, is to neglect the mind. So I had personal realization of that just in the morning, how to beat the mind, is that when you get up, your mind is telling you to sleep more. You know, and sometimes it says just 5 minutes, and then every 5 minutes it says just 5 minutes, then it says. So I think one way of beating the mind is to neglect the mind. And that's the greatest punishment of the mind, just to neglect the mind. And that's called tapasya. And I think in the other, Vidyananda Maharaj gave a nice definition of tapasya in the 11th canto. It said, despite the irrational impulses of the mind and senses, we continue in our service. So Maharaj is saying, you know, in the morning, if the mind is wandering, you know, chant your service, keep on chant. The mind's going to say so many things. It's going to say, don't get up and chant, you know, or do something else but chant. And in the evening, the same thing, you're tired. And Maharaj is saying, you know, the shoes, the service. The mind's going to say so many things, so many things. So we neglect the mind, but we neglect the mind by the service that's given to the spiritual master, which may not be, which won't coincide with our nature, our mind, and service, and senses all the time. So I think that was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's mood, that's His Holiness Radhanath Swami's mood, to engage the disciples in service 24 hours a day. And every time the mind says, you know, let me do this, or let me do this, or let me do this, instead of what is your duty and what is your activity, that's like beating the mind. I think Maharaj's point here is so relevant. You know, the service that you have, both the active service and the more chanting and hearing and the active service, keep on doing it despite the mind.
Gadara Pandit Prabhu.
Maharaj, I was wondering if you could speak about the benefits of associating with devotees that are on an equal level with you. What are the possible benefits of that? Or could there be any pitfalls of associating too much with those that are junior to you?
What are the benefits of associating with devotees who are on an equal level? Could there be any pitfalls associating with the devotees who are junior to you always? In the association of devotees who are on an equal level, we have to see what is the instruction, what we should look for. The instruction is we should become friends. Should make friends with devotees who are on an equal level. The instruction in regards to devotees who are junior is we should instruct them.
So when we make friends with devotees, there is something very interesting and very important happening to us. We have to open ourselves up. At the moment we open ourselves up, there will be necessary critique coming, feedback from the devotees. I think we should do it like this. And that is sometimes painful for the unsurrendered soul. So friendships sometimes are ports where the unsurrendered persons want to escape from. They don't want to be in the ports of friendship, in the ports. Ports means harbors of friendship. They want to not be friends. They want to be lonely wolves. They don't they fear when I'm making friends, I will become vulnerable. I will not be able to keep my position as Mr. or Mrs. Exalted. So friends are often helping each other, and true friendship means also to sometimes correct the other when he's seen goes in a certain direction. So the difficulty when we are with juniors only is that we will never be able to be corrected, because juniors will never tell us when we do any faults or any breaches of etiquette and so on and so forth. And that when there is a certain danger, I think we should all go to and seek out true Vaishnava friends and Vaishnava friendship, which will keep us on the path. And we should also be open to critique. To mind comes a beautiful episode of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's preaching. There was always a man who followed him around, who always used to get up at the end of the lecture and criticize him totally. But in an irrational way. It was certainly not with so much good intention. So after some time, this man died a natural death, and it came to the attention of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that this man he had left the body, and he cried, and he said that this man was actually his well-wisher. I don't think friendship should always be in criticizing mode. That's not what I say here, but I'm saying when you are coming on with equals, you are bound to take on new inspirations, and sometimes also you open yourself up for correction and improvement. This is a great service which friendship has. But you can also open friendships. You can serve the friend. Wonderful. And when we are with juniors only, we are always Mr. Exalted, Mr. Glorious. Because the junior will see us like this. Yes,
you said that friendship, we're open to critique. I'm wondering, these three different categories were there, and that sounds like that we could get from a superior critique. So I'm trying to, I don't know, maybe I'm being over analytical over a simple point.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between friendships with equals and friendships with superiors? Because you can have friendships with superiors and be open to critique, and that'll be better because they've gone through everything you've gone through. So what exactly is friendship with an equal? Because critique can be gotten from a
superior, and we should get instructions from
it. Yeah, probably be better than that with somebody equal. So what is exactly friendship?
You are always together with a friend. Yes, with a superior, it is not always there. Yes, but you are right. Superiors are, their role is to the friendship. Why should I have friendships? What is happening in Vaishnava friendships? I was speaking of opening up to a friend, revealing your mind and confidence, and getting confidential instructions, sometimes instructions which guide us. But yes, main point in Vaishnava friendship, what is it actually? I would really like to turn the microphone to Radhanath Maharaj, because he is such a good friend to the essential element of Vaishnava friendship. I think it's a very important question. I can just tell friends, come around Lord Krishna and serve him. By spiritual friendship, in other words, has Krishna in the center. And from that, I believe Radhanath Maharaj is much more qualified to talk about Vaishnava friendship. I'm just learning something from him.
I'm not more qualified. Because you are my best friend, I must obey what you say. Sudhata Sarabhagunthana. Krishna says in Gita that I am the well-wishing friend of all living beings. Krishna is really the supreme friend. It is said, a friend in need is a friend indeed. Have you heard this? When you're in need, you really know who your friends are. So, when is the greatest time of need? Time of death. At that time, only Krishna can save us. So therefore, Krishna is the supreme well-wishing friend of all living beings. A friend is one who will never leave you. At the time of death, do you maintain any of your friendships with your family members or the people on the corner that you hang out with? Or even the people in the ashram? Well, Krishna is such a friend that is Paramatma. He never leaves us. Even if we're the worst of sinners and we take our next birth as a worm in a sewage ditch, Krishna's right there in our heart. He never leaves us. So Krishna is a supreme friend. And if we call upon our friend at the time of death, he will deliver us and take us back home, back to Godhead. He never abandons us. So a real friend in this world is someone who helps us to always remain with Krishna. So our real friendship in Krishna consciousness is to encourage one another in Krishna consciousness. That is a friend. Rupa Goswami describes six loving relationships or exchanges amongst friends to reveal one's mind honestly and to hear another person reveal their mind honestly, confidentially. That is friend. A friend is one who exchanges prasad and exchanges gift. Especially the gift of Krishna consciousness, the gift of the mercy of Guru. When we exchange these things, we are friends. One who is really concerned for your Krishna consciousness is your friend. And this is how we should be friends amongst peers. Because sometimes we're strong, and then we help someone when they're weak. And sometimes we're weak and we need somebody else's support, encouragement, and help when we're down. This is friendship. But we try to develop real intimate love with each other through serving one another, by helping one another, always remain connected to Krishna. When we chant together, when we read together, when we discuss Krishna together, when we discuss overcoming anarthas together, when we serve together,
This is real friendship. When we're down, our friend does not exploit us, but he helps us. Yes? Prabhupada said that our movement should be based on love and trust. These are the two most essential ingredients of friendship, love and trust. To try to create that environment in our relationships so that we really, that we can trust each other. That we behave in such a way that we know that whatever happens in my life, I trust that this person will be there to help me. That this person will always be affectionate to me. To help bring me to Krishna. And he allows me to help me bring him to Krishna. When Krishna is the center, when the supreme, ever-well-wishing friend, Krishna, who never abandons us in every circumstance, when he becomes the center of our relationship, then we become truly intimate friends in the spiritual sense. Does that answer your question? Are your questions ever really answered? Yes, very well. Anything I believe it. Should we continue?
I have a question. Srila Prabhupada was so merciful, so kind to his devotees. He used to cook for them, he cleaned up after their initiation ceremony. But then when I read that one of his popular statements was, never trust a politician or a woman. It's very hurtful being a woman. And secondly, if we're spirit souls, and why does he categorize us just by our external form?
5 minutes? I just wrote a 5-page journal on this subject. And it's a little complex, but I think a very, very strong certainly Prabhupada gave great respect to women. In fact, he was quite even revolutionary in terms of your own culture. In India, you will never see on the temples a woman pujari, or you never see a woman live in the ashram. So Prabhupada was actually quite liberal and revolutionary in that regard, and demonstrated extraordinary kindness and respect to women, who he wanted them all addressed as mother. So I wouldn't take one statement out of context and try to make it his whole philosophy. The mood of an acharya or a teacher, especially from that orientation, in my experience, is that they speak strongly and in a particular context, even when that context is not necessarily mentioned. So the nature of a woman is very, very nurturing. That's her side. Very, very affectionate. More so than a man. And that nurturing and affectionate side is completely essential in society to bring up children with peaceful minds. Krishna Chaitanya, we know that in Ayurveda and astrology, and you've also done, I know, psychology in terms of Ayurveda, that the moon in astrology represents both the mother and the mind. And there's a relationship between that. Because if you have a good mother who's there for you with a very nurturing attitude, you'll grow up with a very, very peaceful mind. And if you see people that have very, very peaceful and even minds, you can look to the mother. And because in modern society, this aspect of a woman is not actually promoted and supported, we see that people grow up with great neurosis. And we have so many people with depression, anxiety. I'm preaching all the time. And if you look back, you'll see, because they did not have a mother at home who took that feminine, nurturing side and took that, so it's a very, very important aspect of society. And therefore, in that context, Prabhupada spoke of that and spoke of the certainty and supported that. And any statements in that regard, I think, if you fit into that context, that the nurturing emotional side of a woman, which is promoted and is part of her femininity, and the man generally has a side, generally, not in every case. In fact, when I wrote this series of articles on this subject, and I got a lot of response, etc., I got back an article that was sent from a feminist magazine where they did scientific studies of the brain scientifically, and showed that, you know, in general, a woman has a more nurturing emotional side and a man has a more analytical side. But in the study, it made one very important point. He said that they said this is true in 80% of the cases. So it meant that there are women that also have the other nature inside, and they should also be engaged and supported in their Krishna consciousness. It's such a complex subject, but I think if we study it, you know, and actually see what Prabhupada said and what he promoted in context, we'll see that what Prabhupada was supporting is a traditional Indian family system where the woman was encouraged to use that side in relationship with the children so society would grow up mentally healthy. And that if you look at the whole history of Prabhupada, treated women, etc., it was with great respect and great encouragement. It's such a complex subject that I think in this thing it can't be really discussed fully, because there's so many ramifications how that aspect of a woman which was promoted, and therefore she needs protection, and therefore in any system like that it was exploited, and there's abuse, and there's so many things. So it's such a complex and sensitive subject that I don't really think that we can do it justice now. Because if we continue the subject and continue speaking, you know, from people's experience, what they project on it, they won't really get to the basic point. It needs a very long discussion. Otherwise, it'll just be confusion. But I'll share that with you, what we wrote. I mean,
finally, of course, I'm extremely grateful to you.
I'm not doubting it. And your question is a legitimate question that has to be aired and has to be discussed. Because there's a problem.
It's not a problem with the philosophy, but there's a problem with how it's understood. It may be a problem with how it's expressed. It may be a problem with how it's applied. These are legitimate problems that have to be discussed. And women have to be satisfied. People have to be satisfied according to their nature. There's a fine balance between the value of the traditional role, which has to be respected and supported, and satisfying people according to their needs who grow up in a modern society, which is completely different. But so it's going to take a very, very broad-minded analysis of the whole subject. But, it's a legitimate question, and it has to be discussed and understood, especially from women who grow up in a different culture, or even grow up in India and then experience a different culture, or experience their own culture in a way where that protection turns into abuse or exploitation. From so many ways, and there has to be adjustments, like Prabhupada made adjustments. He made adjustments. He let women in the ashram. He promoted them. He made them priests. He made them leading preachers. He loved them. He respected them. He dealt with them intimately. So I'm sympathetic, but I just feel bad that I can't really do justice to your question in such a short time.
I just want to say, when that statement is written in his biographies, it's very disturbing.
It's extremely disturbing.
It should really be taken out of the books.
There's many questions of what should be done. It's extremely disturbing. It's an extremely disturbing statement. But the question is how to understand what he meant. When you understand what he meant, in other words, it shouldn't reflect on him. Maybe there's some difficulty in modern times how this thing will be understood. That may be definitely a fact. But I think the first thing to do is try to understand Prabhupada, understand the perspective, view, his history, and how he dealt with the subject. Then you can come to the next point of discussing, if some of the statements that are made may not have the best effect in preaching, or may be misunderstood, etc. Then that's a whole other subject that has to be discussed with the leading devotees of the society who are preaching and responsible for these things. I sympathize with your question.
Thank you.
See, I would.
Thank you, Maharaj. So we should end now, according to the definition of this matter.
We have this very special day. We have one birthday child among us. Simply not that he's birthday tonight. First, we should sort of sing our traditional songs, and then have the requests.
We trust you. actually, Prabhupada is quoting Chanakya Pandit.
Right.
It's not Prabhupada's words, he's quoting Chanakya Pandit. And as Dhanagar Swami Maharaj explains, that by Prabhupada's actions, by his life, by his practical example, he gave such great respect, honor, and trust, and those who had the integrity of Krishna consciousness. It's also explained in 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam by Sukadeva Goswami that one cannot trust a person who's attached to sense gratification. Right? Because persons who are attached to sense gratification cannot really help the needs of the soul, which is the real needs. Our real needs are needs of the soul. So the people who can really trust are people who can actually, who are there for us to elevate our souls and bring it closest to Krishna. That's the highest level of trust. And in that sense, Srila Prabhupada did explain that man or woman, when they actually become a devotee, then they become transcendental to these considerations of Chanakya Pandit and these other mundane moral considerations. So really, there are so many moral codes in the sense on the relative plane, but when one is honestly and sincerely trying to serve Krishna, they become transcendental to all of those conceptions, in the sense that some of our greatest acharyas are ladies. Goswami, Gangamata, Jandala Devi, Krishna Priya, Himalata, Thakurani. Prabhupada put so much trust in Malati and Jamuna and these devotees. So when ladies become advanced in Krishna consciousness, or when men become advanced in Krishna consciousness, then actually on the spiritual level, we can put our complete trust in them. Anyway. Because they can help to, they can help us be delivered from birth and death. Someone who can help us in that line of people are the people we can really put our real trust in. On a relative level, we may trust somebody because they're honest, they're sincere, they're willing to help us. But real trust is to be put in somebody who could really, who we can depend on to help elevate or deliver our souls. Prabhupada wanted us to be transcendentalists. Prabhupada taught us that when we actually become sincere devotees, we rise above all these material designations, black, white, Anglo, Hispanic, African, Indian, Arabic, Chinese, Mongolian, man, woman, high caste, low caste. These are all material designations. But when we sincerely take to Krishna consciousness, we become transcendental. Therefore, Prabhupada did not discriminate. Maharaj is saying in India, in big temples, very rare, if ever, do you ever see a woman allowed on the altar. The Prabhupada had, all over the movement practically, he had ladies who had pujaris. Yes? When I came to New Vrindavan, Kutila was head pujari. Boston, Sumati was head pujari. Los Angeles, Shilabati were head pujari. Prabhupada did not consider these foods. He considered the quality of the person's consciousness. He trusted that. That was his example. Very good. So now there is birthday for a very trusted lady. And we should offer our love and trust. That's, do you want to just sing a song?
Yes.
I don't know the words, so you should sing
the words.
Hare Krishna to you, Hare Krishna to you, Hare Krishna here sing me. Hare Krishna to you.
Sing Mataji ki.
Yeah. Hare Hare.
Wow, that's amazing. I just wanted to say something that's been made. Unless somebody gets a burning desire to say, but then I would like to request that our three honored guests, the Swamis, to say something. What should a person pray for? What should a person pray for on his or her appearance day? So I would like to request the Swami so that something, we have nothing to give to a gift to, this will be our gift to her on this day. She can meditate on this, answer these great beloved souls. So, Siddhi Mataji's been
very in a very short time, that's over a year now. I think it was last year that you came around. And within a very short time, I mean, within couple of months' time, she's been not missing a single program if work schedule allows it. And not only the programmers, but also attending every single class. We have every Monday, actually there's a program every day at 7. And if it's possible for her to come, she is there. And she's very eager to serve, very, very, very eager to make spiritual advancement and eager to serve. So I can really say that she's a very, very fruitless, very dedicated member, very sincere devotee, very sincerely seeking to make spiritual advancement and taking advantage of the association of devotees and trying to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission in India. So we're very, very grateful for her wonderful service, for her wonderful association, and I know that she will make a great contribution to the natural. Srila Prabhupada Ji Ki. So maybe now we request, maybe we will start with Mr. Satyananda Maharaj to say what should a person pray for on his or her appearance.
Hare Krishna. I personally do not know of any Shastic quote of a specific prayer of when we have taken birthday, but I really think that it's a very nice prayer to request the Lord to please give me the intelligence to distinguish between what is essential in my life and what is not essential in my life. Such a prayer where we want to go deeper into Krishna consciousness is good. On birthday we usually reflect, oh, another year has gone. And Prabhupada said, now we have come 1 year closer to our final end in this body. So it helps us a little bit to think about what is really essential in my life. The unessential things are not so important.
Srila Prabhupada once described, it's kind of, remember with Satchinanda, I try to give a visual. So, he tells such nice stories. Prabhupada once described our sojourn in this world, you know, Ramanda Brahmate, Konya Bhagavan Ji, Guru Krishna Prasadi, Pai Bhakti Lakadi, we're wandering from universe to universe, species of life to species of life. And he said the whole adventure is to catch the truth. So, I think our prayer is that you've been here for so long with so many births, but in this particular birth, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Deej, that you get the mercy of Guru and Krishna, and that the seed of bhakti enters your heart, and that you actually this time catch the truth and therefore make this the last birthday.
Whatever they said is very good. Thank you. My request is on this very auspicious day that we should pray for the mercy and blessings of all Vaishnavas. Thank you.
Together and come up and say birthday cake here.
What is this?
Birthday cake.
Yeah.